Be seated, please. Well, I have a couple of remarks by way of preface. One is, Stephen, our student, Dr. Stephen Tomlinson, our student intern, said last week of last week's gospel, well, this has got to be, this is the longest one. I think I heard that somewhere, outside of the Passion Gospel, of course. And I, with 50 years experience, said, I'm sure you're right. And we beat it this week. Today's gospel is indeed longer than last week's was. So that's one thing. Thing number two is my standard boilerplate, which I hope makes it no less significant to you. This reading is full of references to the Jews. The Jews did this. The Jews did that. The Jews said, everybody in this story is a Jew, including Jesus. So please understand, and I know you do, but I have to say it. Let us all understand and remember that the Jews referred to here are the corrupt leaders of the Jews at that point in history, not the Jews. Confusion over that has led to some awful chapters of the church's history, and we need to be clear about it. Now, I've done something I've never done before, really. I sort of copied out the gospel here on one side of the page, and on the right side of the page, I just did a gloss as I went along. I often do something like that, handwritten, in preparation for a sermon, but I don't know if time ran out on me, energy ran out on me, or I just thought this was a really good idea. I'm going to give you the notes the way they are. This gospel begins with Jesus' disciples. Be clear about that. Jesus' disciples saying, who sinned that this man was born blind? This man or his parents? These are men who had been following Jesus for some time already, seen him in action, and they're still held captive to the understandings of the time about sickness and disability and sin. It was taken to be an automatic proof of sin, disability was. So it's not surprising that people will still make outlandish comments like this or judgments in their own mind. Anyway, Jesus says neither one. Then he goes on to say, I'm grateful to our Bible study, as I always am, for their comments this morning. Then Jesus says a thing that needs some parsing, I think. He says, neither of them sinned. He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed in him. It's very important to me to understand that as meaning not God made this child be born blind to teach you all this lesson. That's not a God in whom I believe. But to say things happen. Things happen in life. Horrible things, like babies being born blind. And I think what Jesus is saying, given the fact that this child was born blind, grew up into this blind man, this is an opportunity to show God's works in the world. Just as if God might say, you or I, were born in whatever condition we were born in order to show God's works of love in the world, true of all of us. Still, after Jesus does this thing that the church does still, takes physical elements, spit and dirt. We don't do that in the church anymore. We use water and oil and wine and bread. but still a very physical, earthy thing, to be the outward sign of the sacrament of the healing of this man's sight. And then Jesus says, go and do the right thing religiously. Go and do the thing we're taught to do. Go to the pool of Siloam and wash, and there you'll be. And he does. The story gets more interesting when the man comes back. A difference of opinion arises. Some say, I know this isn't possible, so it must be a different guy. Others say, really? We can't deny that this is the man. So something happened. The man says consistently, I said in a Bible study, it sort of reminds me of an episode of Law and Order. They questioned him over and over. He says, I'm the man, I was healed, I can see. I was blind, I can see. Hoping that he'll change his story. Well, when the Pharisees are doing that later on, hoping that he'll change his story not to the truth, but to what they want him to say. He doesn't. But anyway, he straightens it out. He says, I'm the man. And but those who are saying that he's lying or implicitly lying say, must be mistaken. The man says, there he was, there I was, now I can see. No, I don't know where he is. Then they bring in the experts of the day, the Pharisees, whose job it is to make judgments in cases like this. And as I said, they go through the same routine. They get his answer again. Then they argue, largely from prejudice, starting with their prior judgment, that they start from Jesus can't be from God because he didn't come through the proper channels. So we know that's wrong. We just need to make the situation fit that fact that we know. Because he doesn't follow the rules. Healed the man on the Sabbath. Well, they're not trying to explain yet because they know that there are strong opinions on the other side of this as well. So they're holding out. Question the man again. Finally, he says, well, he's not just an ordinary man. At this point, he says, he's a prophet. Rather than accept that some kind of healing has taken place, the self-serving experts, and we need to understand that protecting their positions of power, go back to their primary argument. The guy was never blind. Then they checked it out with his parents. Anything to explain this away. Then they wouldn't have to deal with the reality of what happened. Even his parents are extremely nervous at this point. Somebody pointed out in the Bible study that it looks like they'd already kicked him out of their house. And now they throw him under the bus. They say, oh, he's our son, and he was blind. That's it. We don't know anything else. You'll have to talk to him about that. So there they are with their son. Go talk to him again. Oh, if only the days of throwing folks out of families or religious institutions or other institutions because of their refusal to accept harmful and immoral rules and laws, including ecclesiastical ones, were over. But they're not. Well, they're back to stalling because of their own fear of the crowd, who's also divided. they go back to stalling or intimidating, trying to change the narrative, that is, to construct another more palatable set of facts, alternate facts, to suit them and their ends, or both. Anyway, no doubt everyone is getting tired at this point. You probably know what that feels like, making our way through this long gospel. The formerly blind man certainly is. He merely states the physical facts, completely apart from any religious or political consideration. He says, "Here's what I know. I used to be blind, and now I see." Let's forget the religious debate and look at the solid physical evidence. "I once was blind, and now I see." Sounds a lot like one of the hymns we looked at in our Lenten series, Amazing Grace. We can tell he's fed up because he puts himself at risk by impertinently asking, "Do you want to be his disciples?" Not a good move on his part if he's trying to stay safe. The man persists in acknowledging that Jesus has more authority than even they have. Dangerous, dangerous territory. This is before he said to Jesus, "I believe." He's just saying, "This is what happened, and it must be some higher authority at work." So the Pharisees are thrown back into their party line, a circular argument that sounds like Jesus' own disciples at the outset of this long reading. "We know you were born in sin because you were born blind." Only when all of this drama and intrigue and political gamesmanship is over, does Jesus seek out the formerly blind man, we don't have a name for him, to say, "Do you get the point? It's not about the proper liturgy, the reigning theology, or anything else," even though remember that Jesus did adhere to the law and custom of sending him to the Pool of Siloam. "It's about the restorative, healing, life-giving power of God's love, even in the midst of all this very human wrangling. My being the Messiah is to show you the boundless and absolute love of God to the powerful and the power brokers." He says, "As long as you insist on having exclusive authority over the truth, capital T, even to define who sees clearly and who does not, you yourselves cannot see the real and transformative truth of God, who loves everyone and calls everyone to wholeness and enlists our assistance in making that love known in the world, and that includes all of us. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit."